Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
All right. Welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon. Very excited about today's show. Today's episode is brought to you by Fulcrum Technologies. In my 17 years of coaching college basketball, I've used every video editor known to man, from the sports codes and the synergies all the way to some obscure Eastern European products that, you know, are designed for soccer that they were trying to cross over. I'm telling you, Fulcrum Tech is the best product that I've used, and it's a fraction of the cost. Right now, our friends at Fulcrum Tech are giving discounts out to anybody who we send to them. So hit up our friends at Fulcrum Tech, fulcrumtech.com, without an H at the end of tech. So fulcrumtech.com, and let them know that Rising Coaches sent you, and they'll get you a discount. Plus, anytime you do a demo with them, they donate to No Kids Hungry, the No Kids Hungry charity. So really, you kind of have to be an asshole not to do a demo with Fulcrum Tech. I'm trying to get them to adopt that as their motto. They're not on board yet, but I'm still plugging away. Check them out. Great product, great people, and we'll save your program thousands and thousands of dollars. Next week, Rising Coaches Conference East is coming at you, July 6th through the 7th in Atlanta. We'll be at Center Park Stadium on the campus of Georgia State, right downtown, right before all the AAU events kick off there in Atlanta at 8 a.m. on the 8th. So if you're heading into town for that, or you just want to connect with people in person, if you want to learn from some of the best in the business, we got Nate Oates speaking, we got Mike Young, all kinds of great speakers that we're very excited about. There's still time to sign up. It's $199. If you're a member, you get $100 off. Visit risingcoaches.com for a full list of speakers, the itinerary, and hopefully we'll see you guys there live and in person. If you can't make it, you can stream it. We're offering a free trial membership. The event will be live streamed on our member site. If you want to check it out, sign up for that free trial membership. You can watch the conference, see all the benefits that the membership holds, and then go from there. So very excited about that event. We've been working hard on it. And hope to see you in Atlanta next week. All right. Very excited for today's guest. We've got Raul Placeras from Maryville University. Raul, how are you, man? Good morning.
Doing well, brother. How are you?
I'm doing good. You're taking time. You're at the beach right now. You're taking time off the sand to hang out with us. We appreciate that.
Man, my wife and my daughter are killing me with this, you know, sun tanning thing. So I'm good. Hopefully we can stay on for a little bit so I can avoid the sun for a little bit. I'm scorched right now.
You need a break. Okay. We're helping you out then. Break the top hoops and get out of the sun. Most people need it the other way around. Raul, it's been maybe 4 years since you were at our retreat. I think you were at the one in Nashville, correct?
Yeah, man. That was great times. Yeah, we did it at Belmont's beautiful facility there, and had a heck of a time. And obviously, it was a great learning environment for all those of us who were there. So yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see you again. Like I said, I appreciate you being on. A little bit's changed. At the time, you were the associate head coach. Now you've been the head coach there for 2 years, going into your third, I believe.
Yeah, man.
And I want to talk about Maryville and the unbelievable program you guys have built there over the years. But first, I want to talk a little bit about you and learn a little bit about where you're from and your upbringing through the game of basketball.
Yeah, man. Well, I won't bore you to death. I'll try to make it an easy transition for you. But, man, born and raised in Miami, son to Cuban immigrant parents who came here during the Mario boat lift in 1980. I was fortunate enough to catch on with basketball around 9-10 years old. Started YMCA, girls and boys and girls club, played in town Miami as a big league back home in Miami, and worked myself up and was fortunate enough to Sergio Rocco, his brother Pete Rocco, was in charge of Coach Rocco's now an assistant at Samford University, has been at Ole Miss, South Florida, he's been around. His brother Pete, told him he was at the time the head coach at Pace High School, and got an opportunity to go to Pace. Coach Rocco ends up getting a job with the Boys and Girls Club as the executive director, and Mark Lieberman becomes the head coach. Mark worked with Rick Pitino at Louisville. I was fortunate enough to play for Mark for a year. It was just too much of a commute for my parents. You know, we lived on, you know, kind of the South Ridge. We lived about almost an hour away, and it was tough on my dad. My dad worked every day from 5 a.m. to 3 p.m. And, you know, he would have to leave, and Miami traffic is not easy. So, you know, I just felt it was too much of a burden on him. And I ended up getting a scholarship to play at Gulliver Prep, which is another really good private school. Played for Henry Lorenzo, who was there for a long time. That led to me to go to junior college. Went to Keystone Junior College up in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Played for Tommy Dempsey, who was a head coach at Ryder and was the head coach at Binghamton for a long time. That led me to Maryville College. You know, I experienced great success as a player. Went to, you know, both NCAA tournaments in JUCO and went to a Final Four in junior college. Went to a Sweet 16 as a player at Maryville. So total four NCAA tournaments. You know, won a lot of games. I was all conference, broke school records for assists. You know, I tell my kids all the time, you know, that record, if you're getting close to it, you're not getting back in the game. I'm keeping that record forever. But, yeah, man, the game has been great to me. Got to play a little bit of semi-pro ball. There was an ABA team here in Knoxville. Played in that for a couple of years with the Knoxville Thunderbolts. And then got my first opportunity right out of college. Got my feet wet really quick. I was a head high school coach at 23 at Gallimber-Pittman High School. Turned a program who had won, like, I think 20-some games in 5 years, and we won 80 in my 4 years there. We were number two team in the state my last 2 years there. We sent, you know, six, seven kids to the next level, you know, and, you know, just had great success there. My coach, Coach Randy Lambert, who coached at Maryville for 40 years, talked me into being his replacement. He kind of tricked me. He said he had 4 years left. 4 years turned into eight, and that's because we were winning a lot. So I get it. But, man, patiently waited. I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity. And, you know, I'm going on my third year now and 11th overall at our institution. So, man, that's a little bit about me and kind of my journey to where I am today.
Yeah, so much to talk about. You mentioned your parents came over from Cuba, and you mentioned like an event. What was that event?
Mario Boatlift, man. That's when Fidel Castro at the time was basically opening it up to everybody to leave the island, you know. And during that time, you know, if you've watched Scarface a little bit, the intro to Scarface is kind of that, right? The Mario Boatlift and him opening up the prisons, you know, basically anyone who wanted to come and get people from the island, he also would throw whoever he wanted to into these boats, right? So, you know, we're not talking about the greatest of people sometimes, but, you know, it was obviously an event. Took great courage for my parents to leave their family to come to this country to obviously better their lives, but, you know, in return to better the lives of, you know, myself, my sister, and my brother. And we're all very fortunate and thankful for their bravery and their courage to do that.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know about it. I'll have to like Google that event, the Mario Boatlift, a little later. Learn a little history. You talked about coming up in Miami, and you mentioned some names already, and like the Cuban community, the Cuban basketball community in Miami, like people talk about basketball cities, you know, and they talk New York and they talk, you know, LA or, you know, whatever, Atlanta. But like Miami, if you think about the guys that have come out, Cuban or not Cuban, but specifically Cuban, you got Frank Martin, right?
Yeah.
Mike Bellotto.
Yeah.
Yourself.
We got Tony. Yeah, we got Tony Pujol. I just think about it at North Alabama.
North Alabama.
Jose Fernandez at USF, the women's side. Sergio Rocco is an assistant at Stanford now. You know, and there's probably other guys that I'm missing. You know, I think Eric Pastrana, I know, just took the assistant job at Florida. I know his dad is Cuban. They both played at Miami High for Frank and them. So, you know, Shaky, you know, rest in peace. You know, Shaky was the one who got all of this kind of started for us back home. You know, I was a kid, obviously, when he was a head coach. But, yeah, man, you know, it's a strong community. We pull for each other. And, you know, whenever any of us has any type of success, we definitely reach out to one another and stay in touch.
How did all these like great minds and great coaches and players end up in the sport of basketball in Miami? Like, how did that? Was it just?
Cuban guys, for the most part, you know, if we reach 6'1", 6'2", that's a lot. You know, we're not very big, but you know, to play basketball, I guess so many play baseball. Maybe for the few of us, we thought maybe we had an advantage if we got into basketball. Man, I think by nature, Cubans are very passionate people. I think it takes incredible passion to be a good player, but also a very good coach. And I just think the game really mixes with who we are as a culture. You know, you got to have, you know, a level of toughness, a level of pride, a level of courage. And like I said, you know, that passion, you know, we sometimes wear it on our sleeve a lot. So, you know, I think that the game just gravitates to us and who we are as a people.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Maryville and your time there leading up to your head job. First of all, where is Maryville?
Maryville is about 10 minutes, 15 minutes max outside of Knoxville. We're right by the Knoxville airport. You know, Maryville is an institution. We've been open now for 200 years. So it's an established college institution. We play in the USA South Conference, which is comprised of, you know, I think, heck, we might have one of the biggest conferences in the country at any level. You know, we're at 13, 14 teams on the men's side, and I know it's more than that on the women's side. But, you know, small private liberal arts college with roughly about 1,200 students. But, you know, it's uniquely located. You know, we're in between Knoxville, the University of Tennessee, and then the Great Smoky Mountains that are about 40, 45 minutes away. So we got a great blend of city life and obviously a little bit of that mountain life.
Okay, great. Great. And talk about, you mentioned like when you were there, you guys won a ton of games. I think you said you went to the Elite Eight. Tell me about your head coach and kind of the culture that he built.
Man, you know, I obviously played for him, worked for him for 8 years. You know, obviously one of the best Division III coaches in general. You know, he won over 700 wins in his career. You know, we've been, you know, in total to 20 NCAA tournaments as a program, which is the most in the South region at our level. You know, we've had countless All-Americans, All-Conference guys. But, you know, he had it tough. He had to start it from scratch when he first started. I think 5 of his first 7 seasons were losing seasons. But the great thing about our college, you know, they're committed to our coaches and us getting better. And I think that's what happened with him. And in 84, 85, I believe he won his first title in the ODAC. He used to be in the Old Dominion Conference with Randolph-Macon. It's a tough league. Hampden-Sydney, Guilford, at our level, that's a really tough league. And got his first championship, and that kind of got the ball rolling in 90, 91. I think they made their first NCAA tournament. And then we went, I think, from 98, you know, we went to 12 consecutive NCAA tournaments in that time period, which was a big deal. And, man, we've just been very fortunate to get guys that probably shouldn't be playing Division III, but that do value a small, you know, private liberal arts college education and value being in a winning program. So very fortunate, you know, to work under coach, played under coach, and now obviously having my opportunity and continuing that level of success.
So, in addition to getting, you know, of course, every team that wins, you always have players that are probably, you know, a level up. But what was it that like coach did? What was it that Coach Lambert did that like set the culture apart? What was it that he did in practice every day that was unique? That, I mean, 12 straight tournaments is unbelievable.
The consistency of the winning is tough. You know, at our level, we only get to play 25 games, and you know, roughly we're winning, you know, we're an independent for so long, which has also made it really difficult. You know, we had to win 20 games. So you're talking about you had no room for error. I just think the consistency of focusing on the fundamentals, of always being prepared, you know, and just focusing on player development. You know, those are the things that, you know, regardless if it's coach, myself, you know, we really value that, you know, and we talk about that a lot on our recruiting pitches. You know, in regards to the swagger of a champion, you know, kids got it confused a little bit nowadays, the swagger, right? Like, it's not about how you look in a layup line or what shoes you're wearing or how your hair looks. Man, swagger of a champion is if that ball is on the dang floor, we're diving on it. And as as soon as I dive on it, my teammates are picking me up. And, you know, when I get subbed out, I'm jogging off the floor and, you know, and I'm pulling for my teammates, rather, whether I'm playing well or not playing well. And, you know, those little things amount to the big things. And we all know about that. And, you know, we try to hold our players. One thing coach really taught me as a player and working under him, the ability to keep guys, holding guys accountable in every facet of their lives, right? Not just on the floor. So I think that's really important.
When you talk about holding guys accountable, you usually see like two different kinds of ways to do it. And then you probably see a third like combination. You see people that are super demanding and just kind of like, not a dictator, but like very, very demanding and always on their guys and right, no room for let up. And then you see guys that really are intentional about building a relationship with their players. And because that relationship is so strong, their word goes a little further. Where did Coach Lambert fall in that? And there's no right or wrong way. You can win any way you do it, but.
Yeah, I think we're different in that way. I think he's a little bit from that school of not praising as much. Nothing wrong with that. Coach was really a matter of fact type person. I'm a little bit different in that. I'm your harshest critic, but I'm also your biggest cheerleader as a coach. And, you know, I take this from Frank Martin said this a long time ago. You know, there's no such thing as tough coaching, right? And I believe that. You either love your kids or you don't. If you love them, you want the very best for them and what they do every single day. And if you don't, you're going to reap the benefits of not loving them. And in today's day, man, I think that's really, really important. These kids are under a lot of pressures, no matter what level they're playing at, you know, academically, socially, and athletically. And you do, you have to love them. You got to let them know when they're doing well. And you also have to let them know when, man, they're not meeting their end of the goals you have set for them. So I think, you know, coach had a good blend. I'm just different in that way.
Yeah.
I'm really, trying to push my guys, man.
All right. You talked about when you came on staff there, coach said, okay, four more years, then I'm out of here. I'm going to hand you the keys. And it turned into eight. That's a long time to sit. Like, you don't see too many assistants saying stay in one spot for 8 years. You know, it's a hard business. It's hard to get. It's very easy to get like anxious for the next step. How did you keep yourself grounded and patient?
Man, I credit my wife for that. Honestly, I think as you get older in this profession, family is really, really important. And I think when your family is happy, good things will happen. And you know, at a young age, like any other young coach, I wanted to move up the ladder as quickly as possible and get jobs and, you know, and see what happens. And I've had, you know, other opportunities that I could have taken that I didn't get, you know, whether it's runner up for a job or not. But my wife kept me really grounded that it's important for all of us to be happy. And I think as I've gotten older, I guess that's the gray in my beard now, right? The wisdom, right? Man, it's important for my daughter to be extremely happy. I have my daughter here. My wife's family is entirely here. So, man, I just enjoy seeing them happy. I can still get my fix in and being a coach. It doesn't matter what level it is. And, you know, to me, it's I wanted to be the head coach at the place I played and that I was very successful at as a player. And I've been successful as an associate head coach. And, you know, I wanted to do it, you know, my way and see what would end up happening. You know, I stayed loyal to coach. I stayed loyal to our institution and they reciprocated that back. And, you know, we've in year two, we've won a regular season championship and a conference tournament championship. So hopefully we can continue that.
Yeah. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
I want to talk about like taking over a program from a legendary coach, you know, a Hall of Famer. I think when you take over a program that's like going through a rebuild, there's almost no pressure on you, right? And you can probably try things in year one. You know, you get to year three, four, that's when the pressure comes. But year one, even a little bit of year two, you can mess around a little bit with different ideas and you know, you can afford to not have success. But when you take over, like I'm imagining like a Maryville College that, you know, has all that success that they've had and that consistency. What is that like?
Well, heck, man, he's smart now. You know, no wonder why he's as successful as he's been. He, he got out the door when he graduated eight seniors, you know. you know, our eight seniors, we had won more games than any team in the South in the last 3 years of their careers, right? And basically, I inherited a team of one senior, and I played nine freshmen. And we took our lumps in year one. And I knew that would happen, right? It doesn't matter what level it is. You're gonna take those lumps early on, and but you continue, you know. And we talked about culture to start a little bit of this, but that's why you rely on your culture and the things you have done, and things that have been successful. And you know, I just stayed the course, and we got better every five games of my first year. You know, we didn't start off very well. We ended up a little bit better, but I told the guys the biggest thing was you know, we're gonna become our habits, and we continue to stay loyal to those habits. And I told them, the guys that stay, you know, in today's era of, you know, the transfer portal and everybody wanting to get to the next big, better thing, I guess, some guys left. But I promised those guys that did stay, that we were going to be champions. And, you know, thankfully it happened in year two.
We become our habits. That's an awesome deal. You know, when you're an assistant, there's always things that you're like, okay, when I become a head coach, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You know, you're always kind of building up in your head. Some people write it down, like the things that you're going to want to implement. I'm curious, like how different that was from what you guys had done in the past at Maryville, and how much you were like, you know, like you said, if it's not broke, don't fix it. You know, let's keep doing what we've been doing.
Yeah. You know, from a recruiting standpoint, continue to recruit, you know, student athletes that are, you know, and I tell you this, you know, I think our biggest success, and I have a young team. I don't graduate a soul from last year's championship team, and we're going to have the same team basically for the next 3 years. When you're better people, and I think Nick Saban talked about this year, when you're better people, you know, are your best players. And in my case, they're also my better students. You know, you have a great opportunity for growth. And we talk about growth a lot. That's one thing that I'm different from coach, I would say. I think we spend a little bit more time on trying to develop our guys wholesome, right? Total package. We have a lot of individual meetings. We talk about a lot of life skills that are going to obviously help you in your career. And you hear it all the time. A lot of coaches talk about it, you know, these next 4 years, about the next 40. I'm really into that. I really am. I talk to our guys a lot about, it's not what people can do for you, right? It's what people can do to you. So it's important to, you know, surround yourselves with people that are really going to push you, empower you, mentor you to be the very best you are each and every day. But man, I'm big on growth, man. You know, my players will tell you, my assistant will tell you, I probably say that word a lot each and every day, because I think it's really, really important in today's world.
Okay, what about the basketball stuff? I know now you guys are running like read and react, drive and kick type offense. Has that always been a staple of?
No, you know, that's another thing that changed a little bit. You know, Coach Lambert was a four out one in motion guy, double staggers away. You know, we had a lot of success in it. I played in it. You know, your ones and fours are screeners. You know, but shoot, you know, if you're telling a one and a four, man, all you're going to be is a screener. That ain't a lot of fun. You know, there's elements of the four out one in motion that I've taken into more of our driving space. You know, I've really dove into Doug Novak, who's an exceptional coach up at Bethel, up D3. You know, and I'm the type of guy, I don't, you know, if I see something that I like, I don't care what level it is. You know, I'm going to ask you questions. I'm going to reach out to you. There's a heck of a high school coach here in our area, Ricky Norris, who goes to Webb School. I think you have Rob Lanier is speaking at your conference down in Atlanta. See, I coach Emery, who's now at Davidson, when I did the whole B-Maze AAU thing about 3 years ago. But Rob's son played for Ricky at Webb, and he's one of the finest high school coaches that I know, and he's a big driving space guy as well. And so we've fed off a lot of, you know, from one another. But yeah, we've just, you know, I think in today's game, I think you need space. The more space you can create, the more fluid the game is, and the easier it is to teach your guys where to be on the floor. You know, and you're seeking that stationary three, man. You watch the NBA game, that's that's become a big part of our game, and it's going to be a bigger part now, especially with the line going back for us. You know, the percentages will be low here for the next couple of years, but I think we'll, you know, we'll get accustomed to it, and we'll see the percentages grow from there. But, you know, I'm a big believer in space, man. Space, space, space. And, you know, does your teammate need space, or does your teammate need help, right? If he needs help, go get the dang ball and help him out. If not, get the heck out of the way. So, you know, we try to build that culture of going from good to great. We hear that a lot in today's game, but we really work on that every single day. Snapping our passes, working on our simple finishes around the rim. You know, there's no need to really complicate this game. This game is easy, but you got to do those easy things really well. And that's what we try to do every day in practice.
Okay, I've been a part of one team that's ran dribble drive, so I'm familiar with that. But I think what you guys do is probably a little different. Talk to me about your rules for your offense. Like, what if do you have rules for them?
And how you know, anytime alley to alley pass, you know, we're cutting through and opening up that space. You know, you're giving up.
Are you? I'm sorry.
Yeah, just through to the corner.
Side or weak side?
Yeah, no, you know, strong side. So now you're giving that player the ability to have that whole side of the floor. You know, most teams are not going to help ball side on a shooter. So we're going to put always good, you know, we traditionally have had really good shooters. That also helps our offense. But you can't help from the weak, you know, from the as you're driving into that gap, you can't help. So now you're putting the pressure on the defense constantly on playing one-on-one defense. Well, you know, if the help comes, you see chess to help. That means someone is open. So we're putting guys in specific spots where, you know, as a ball handler, where guys are at all times. You know, that's one thing I learned when we did our, you know, our retreat down at Belmont. You know, Coach Bird at the time when he was still coaching, they had a heck, I can't remember who that post player was, but it was still four out, one in, but they kept guys in specific spots. So that post player knew whenever he got touches in the block, you know, he knew exactly where his teammates would be. And it made it really simple. And that's what I've tried to do. I've tried to simplify our offense by creating space, by seeking as many stationary threes, layups, straight line drives as we possibly can. And obviously, at the end of the day, you know, we have a really, really good post player. And Felix Uwadiale, who's been the rookie of the year in our league, and he was all conference last year. We're trying to search deep post ups. And, you know, we're trying to score from that 2 to 4 feet space. Man, that gives you a little bit of what we're trying to do offensively. You know, that's our fastball, I guess, if we're playing baseball. And then our curveball is our screen game, right? You know, in today's game, the screen action, the Euro ball screen continuity is really important. So, you know, we try to do that. If our driving space ain't working, I got to find something else to try and win a game. So we go into our Euro ball screen. And, you know, it was very successful for us last year. So we're going to hopefully continue to work on it and get better at it.
Yeah, it is amazing how, like, some of the best offensive minds, their stuff really is simple. Like, there's nothing – the great ones have a way of, like, simplifying the game, right? Not making it more complicated. Just you look at it and you're like, wow, it's that easy, huh? And Evan Brads, I think that was the post player that played
it. Evan Brads, he was so dang good, man. He was so good, so efficient.
Yeah, we were in that league. I had to unfortunately get a front row seat to that 2 times a year. He was hard to deal with. Okay, talk a little bit about like your vision for the program going forward. So you've taken over. You guys had success. Obviously, you got a young team all coming back off of a regular season and tournament championship. Like, what do you see going forward for you? What do you see going forward for Maryville basketball?
Man, continuing to get better. I honestly don't want it to sound cheesy, but continuing to maximize myself as a coach, doing things like Rising Coaches. I kind of shared that with you, I think, 2 nights ago. Rising Coaches was great for me and my development as a coach, you know, growing up in my profession, but it was also extremely beneficial for us during the pandemic. A lot of us coaches didn't have much to do, right? Like, we had to stay home. We couldn't be around our guys. And your platform created something that we could all, from all different parts of the country, heck, parts of the world, could join one another and kind of brainstorm and get better at it. And I think that's the biggest thing, man. I took this from Coach Schertz, who just took the Indiana State job. You know, he did a heck of a job at LMU as a Division II program in our state. And, you know, it's the five cycles of a business cycle, right? There's the birth, the growth, the plateau, the decline, and the death of a company. And I think in anything that we do, we have to maintain ourselves in that growth phase. And to me, again, here we go, right? It's not, my players, if they're hearing this, if they listen to this, they're going to be like, I'm going to tune this off because I've heard this 1,000 times. But growth, man, I seek growth. I seek growth in myself as a coach. I seek growth as a husband, as a father. And I expect the same from my players, whether it's a new drill that they learn, a new move, a new way to get into our flow offensively or something different defensively. But that's what I seek, man. I seek growth in this new year. We're big on words. You know, our word last year was being unselfish. Our new word this year is pursuit. And we're in pursuit of new challenges, new opportunities of growing our game. And that's what I'm about, man. Whether it's a book, whether it's a video, it doesn't matter if it's $1.99 or $99.99, right? Whatever gets me to become a better coach and a better father and a better husband, man, I'm willing to do. So that's kind of what I see, man, going forward in year three is improving in what we did the year before.
Is there a book or something that has recently caught your mind just in the last few months?
Man, I read Row the Boat by PJ Fleck and John Gordon. You know, I've known that. It's nothing earth-shattering, right, when you read the book, but it's something that's simple and it's true. You know, I read a lot. You know, Pound the Stone is a really good book. I just got The Little Prince. It's an old French book that's really was designed for kids, but it's really an adult book. I'm hopefully going to finish that. I've started on Many Habits. That's really good, just setting many habits each and every day that hopefully will lead to bigger and better things. Sometimes we want to set these humongous habits, you know, these goals, and they're just, you know, too big to accomplish that quickly. So if you accomplish smaller goals at a smaller pace, you'll start building that discipline and consistency. So, yeah, man, continuing to read, maximizing myself, man. I'm a God-fearing man, and I believe in God, and the only person I know who's come back from the dead is Jesus Christ. So I know I only got one life to live, and I'm going to live it to my fullest, man, and I'm going to try for my players to see that in me, and hopefully that helps them develop into better people, better dads, better husbands one day.
I love it. The last thing I wanted to talk about with you is just D3 hoops. What is it about, like, is there anything at the D3 level that you love that you think everyone else is missing out on?
I don't know. I think it's a little bit more pure, at our level. You know, the student athlete is paying for his education. I think, you know, you try to maximize the resources that you have. Sometimes I see some of these coaches, you know, complaining about 3 to 4 hour bus rides, you know, get on a bus ride for 6-7 hours and play, and then get on the bus and travel about 2-3 hours again, and then play the next day at 1 o'clock. Right. You know, the just those little things that we have to deal with that maybe the D1s don't have to deal with, to me is fun. It's exciting. It's part of our level. One thing I will share is I think there's this big misinterpretation that our level, there's not really good players, right? You know, there's some really dang good players at our level. And, you know, by the time they're juniors and seniors, and they've really matured physically and their games have gotten there, and we're talking about these guys, the better players in the country are mid-major Division I guys. They're guys that are going to make money overseas. So, man, I love it for the pureness of it. Dealing with the stuff we have to deal with, not having the major resources and having small budgets and, you know, penny crunching here and there to make everything work. But then I think at this level, if you ever move up, I think the jobs get a little bit easier. I know the pressures get a little, probably the pressure gets a little bit harder, but you're able to multitask. You're able to do so much. And you know that in your journey, right? Where, you know, me as a head coach, you know, I got to pick up bags. I got to set up meals. I got to cut, slice tape. We got to do it all. It's only myself and my assistant. And I'm so thankful for my assistant, Jeff McCord, who does so much for me and our program. But you know, to me, that's the beauty of our level is being able to do so much. So you're a more well-rounded coach, you know, and, you know, the D1 guys may not hear this, but there's a lot of dang good D3 coaches out there that have made a really good living as they've gone up. So maybe give the D3 guys a little bit more love and more opportunity.
I love it. What about summertime? Like, I'm a big proponent of like less is more. And I really like don't like the trend of basketball becoming this year-round sport, especially at the D1 and D2 levels. They're allowed to work their guys out all summer. I'm sure your guys are getting work in, but you're not breathing, like, because of the rules, you can't be breathing down their neck.
No, we technically, I can't start with my guys till October 15th. So it's kind of more of a high school model, right? That doesn't mean like we have our strength coach. He'll go through the first 6 weeks of preseason conditioning and all that. But technically on the floor, working on things, I can't start till October 15th. I basically have a month or less than a month now with the new dates to get ready for a season, right? But I think there's advantages to that. There's disadvantages to that. But I think I'll echo on what you said. I think less is more is really important. I think the mind, keeping that mind clear and fresh for a season. And, you know, we're trying to play into March. So you're talking September, October, November, December. We're talking 7 months of working out, shooting, study halls, like, the clearer the mind is, the fresher the mind is, I think the more you're able to get out of your student athletes. And I try to do that. I stay in touch with my guys, obviously, all summer. You know, if you're trying to be great and you're trying to win championships, you know, it's a 12-month commitment. But how you tackle that commitment, I think, will help you as you grow as a player and you grow as a coach. You know, yeah, I agree with you, man. Sometimes you see these programs and I know it's tough for people to understand this, but they're 18 or 21 year old young men that also value other things besides basketball. And I think we have to step back a little bit as coaches and understand with proper balance in all aspects of it, I think you're going to maximize the player. And if we just focus on basketball and basketball only, I don't know if you can truly maximize the person. And if we're in this business, I think that's what we're seeking is maximizing these young men to become men and be ready to tackle the world.
I love that. And you talk about keeping their mind fresh. I mean, your guys, the burnout's a real thing. And
no doubt.
Let me ask you this question. Your guys come back from the summer, like, improved, right? Like, they get better.
Yeah, they're better, you know, but, I know this may sound silly, but, like, we'll play spade tournament, right? Like, card games. We'll play dodgeball. We'll play kickball. Like, at some point, they're still young kids, and this needs to be fun. If there's one thing that I learned, you know, I've been coaching since I'm 23 years old. Heck, I'm reaching that 20-year mark here soon. But one thing that I go to my 23-year-old self now to, I'm going to be 40 this year, is, man, practice needs to be fun. They want to come to practice. And so many guys and so many programs, you're like, you see them when they come out on the floor, it's like, another day, right? Nah, that's not what I want, right? You know, we play music in our practices, you know, like, it's, we know that basketball, we're fully committed to being the very best we want to become, but we also know it's a game and it's meant to be fun. And you know, for the real extremists out there, they probably don't like that, but I am a firm believer you can get the most out of your kids when it's that type of environment where they know, man, coach is serious about our business, but coach is also serious about us really enjoying this process and journey. So I try to make it fun, man. I think that's part of it.
Well said. Well said. All right, Raul, last thing before we let you go, give us some advice to coaches who are trying to move up in the profession. What's maybe the most valuable lesson you've learned over your 23 years?
Or 20 years? I think, and you know, this is nothing earth shattering. Many coaches have said this, but one thing that's really stuck out to me is being where your feet are. Sometimes we focus so much on the next job that we don't do the current job to the best of our abilities. You have to stay loyal in this business. You have to work your tail off. And that'll show. And I think the guys that truly succeed in this business are the ones that really learn each and every step. And this is a, you know, it's a step-by-step process. The ones that get there really quickly, I'm not saying that they haven't been successful and they don't experience success, but the guys that have been doing this for a long time, if you look at their track record, they've done it at every level. They've done every single job that's needed to get to that spot. So man, fall in love with where you're at. When you can do that, I think money comes your way. Opportunity comes your way. Great things will come your way. But when you're totally focused on the next thing, I just don't think that's the way to go. So, you know, my biggest advice is that is stay loyal to your boss. Do what is asked from you. You know, do more than what is required of you. Whether your boss says yay or nay to it, still bring it to the table. I think thinking outside the box is really important for assistance. And whether your coach accepts it or not, or takes it or uses it, that's up to the head coach. But always bring that to him. Man, and spend a lot of time with your players. At the end of the day, we all want to win. We all want to, you know, have nice flashy rings and championships and put banners up. But remember that if you got into this, this is a profession that it's about teaching. And it's about teaching young men to become better people, better fathers, better husbands, and get them ready to really tackle the world and make an impact in the world. And if you're doing it for any other reason, then I don't know. I'm not a big follower of that. This is a profession that has given me a lot. It's a game that's given me a lot. And the only way that I can repay it back is by being myself and continue to invest in people. I guess that's another thing I'll throw at you, Adam. Investing in people. They're going to let you down. Some will. But it's the best business in the world because you see the total growth of a human being. So invest in people, man. I love investing in young men.
I love it. Well said, Raul. Well, Raul, I appreciate your time. I know you're at the beach. I know your family's waiting for you to get back out there. But as always, it's a pleasure catching up, man. And appreciate
brother, I thank you. You know, I mean this from the bottom of my heart. You're an exceptional person. Everyone that works with you as well. Love what you do for the game. I'm a big advocate of what you do. If we can help you in any way, you know where I'm at. But continue to do that, man. You have helped so many people at all different ladders, you know, at all different levels, you know, fulfill their dreams and continue to do that. You're really pushing the game in the right direction. So appreciate Rising Coaches and especially you for what you've done for so many years.
Thank you, Raul. Appreciate you, man. Take care.
All right. See you, brother.